Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
And welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. Well, today, and I practiced this a little bit, I'm connected with two gentlemen sitting right now in Deventer. And that's in the Netherlands. And they're in the building, I understand there's three, you know, locations for the Saxion University of Applied Science. And I'm happy that I can welcome today Hidde de Jong and Edwin de Vos. And you're going to walk us through. Now, here's the thing. You're going to walk us through the management challenge. I totally understand that. But I was struggling a little bit when preparing for this meeting because you're doing so many gameful approaches in your learning journeys with not only inside the university, but also beyond. And hopefully, maybe we'll carve out 20 minutes at the end that I can also ask you a little bit about that. But first, welcome to the podcast, Hidde and Edwin.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So where is the connection? Edwin, I know that you told me that the game was created 1998 and you got involved 2005 and now you're the sole owner. But I'll let you explain you know, what the management challenge is. And when we were preparing for this podcast, you immediately mentioned Hidde. And that's because you co-facilitated this game at one point, or you taught the class that Hidde is now teaching. So I'm really happy that we can not only have, let's say, the owner of the game, but also a real facilitator in the same podcast.
Facilitator of the game.
You are also a real... Actually, you are also a real trainer of the facilitators, right? We get into the business model of this simulation in a second, but first walk us through. In fact, I will ask you two traditional questions. What should our listeners know about you? And how do you explain the management challenge in 30 seconds for someone who's never heard about it?
My name is Edwin. I live in the Netherlands in Amersfoort, and I call myself a playful management consultant. I do a lot of different things, and one of them is the management challenge, but also Topazia, an episode a couple of months ago with Viro. I also do the Lego Serious Play, as you do, Julian. That's mm-hmm. where we met in Billund in 2014, I think. One of the products is the management challenge, which is a serious management simulation in which participants can experience what it is to be the direction or the management of a company. Mm. That's it. That is the management challenge in real short.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And yes, a nod to Topazia and Viro and Juicy. I'll link the episode, okay, in the show notes. Also very, very interesting game, which I understand you are also using, of course, in the class. But now over to you, Hidde. What should our listeners know about you? And maybe I'll just ask you the same question. How do you explain the management challenge yes. to your participants that will get involved?
Yes, well... I'm Hidde. I live in Deventer together with my wife and five children. And a few years ago, I stopped teaching. Actually, I'm a lecturer of safety and security management, but I stopped saying that I teach, and instead I play with my students. And the reason for that was, first of all, that I like to play very much. But also I was noticing that I was working really hard and my students were just comfortable and relaxed, but not learning very much. At least I thought they could do more and they could learn a lot more. And that's when I stopped teaching and started playing. And that's also where I met Edwin, because when we were developing the business continuity management semester, I was talking to several people, among which Viro, and I told him I was looking for something to do with Legos, and I was also looking for a way for our students to experience what it is to lead a company, because in business continuity management, you want to manage a company under business as not usual circumstances. But if you do not even know what the business as usual circumstances are, then it's really difficult to manage under business as not usual circumstances. So that's where Edwin and I connected. And well, then one thing led to another. And now for 4 or 5 years, we've been facilitating this management challenge within the business continuity management semester. And last year, and actually also the first year, Edwin taught the module business continuity management. Because, well, a colleague, first of all, a colleague went ill, and then the second time a colleague was on maternity leave. So good reasons for Edwin to step in, and very thankful that, well, that he has provided this facilitation experience to the semester as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. And how do you explain it to, so literally, how do you introduce it to the class? I understand that this happens really early in the semester or in their learning journey. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, it's actually one of the first weeks. We already tell them, okay, congratulations. Last year's management team has been booted, and now you're the new management team. So you're going to run the company, and you're going to experience what it means to run a company and make the decisions. And you have the time pressure, and you have the feedback from the management reports. And then they have to decide. They have to they have to develop a strategy and, well, hopefully stick to the strategy, because that usually works best. But then in the meantime, a lot of feedback gets provided, and they just experience it. So, we sent them the manual up front, but not to read it entirely, just to make sure that they know the context and that they can log into the system. But it's really intuitive.
Correct. Okay. I also received a manual. I have to admit I did not fully read it. But here's, the episode, so we can talk about it. But, I want to go back to what you said. Yeah. And then, of course, this is the Serious Games podcast. So, of course, we believe, and I want to plus what you just said on the, you know, engagement part or how much work it who's working in the room, right? Who's really learning in the room and so definitely yes, with playful moments or this decision making game, more engagement, more emotions. I just wrote down you also more real time feedback, which is crucial for learning. And then also more struggles, right? More decisions, which means more failure, which leads into more, I would say, meaningful conversations and I really want to unpack this in this episode, how you also, you know, bridge into the debrief and then into the greater good of not just being in a game, but also, you know, connecting that to the topics that you then teach. I prepared a couple of questions on that. So let's go back to, I don't know if you want to go back to before 1998. The 2-hour lecture of where this game originated, but maybe shortly. How did you learn about the game, and when and how did you get involved? And then Hida, I will ask you how, you know, same question, but then how you made this a thing in the semester? How you said, yeah, that makes way more sense playing or inviting in the simulation rather than me lecturing them to death. Edwin.
A management challenge was developed by Willem-Jan van der Velde, who is now retired. He's in his 80s. And when he developed the management challenge, he was working at Digital. And he made the product and did a buyout at Digital. And he started traveling the world with his wife and a laptop doing the simulation. A lot of companies all over the world, he traveled a lot, did it in Dutch, but in English, also in German, French, no problem for him. But there was one problem, according to my employer. They met each other, and the problem was that he was the only person that could deliver the management challenge to clients, because it was on his laptop in an Excel. And so my employer thought, when we bring it to the internet, others can facilitate it too. And I have some person who studied some business informatics. That's me. That can make the online environment. So I made that in 2005. That is how I got involved. And I started traveling with Willem Jan to clients and finding the fault in the code when something happened. But after a while, the system was stable. So I started facilitating. So that's how I started facilitating. I helped Willem Jan when he delivered a session. And after that, after 1.5 years, 2 years, we changed roles. We switched roles and I started facilitating myself because I had seen him doing it a lot of times. Did that until 2010, 11. I switched jobs and then Willem Jan asked me and two others if we wanted to become co-owners of the Management Challenge. So we did in 2011. And we delivered a lot of sessions ourselves. We started training other facilitators, people like Hidde, but also in other companies. A lot we do a lot in education at the moment. But that's what we did until 2020, the start of this year. Then I got the opportunity to become the sole owner of the Management Challenge. So I started this year with a completely rebuilt system. So this is version number 5 we are currently working with. And Hidde was the first person that used the new system in a session as a facilitator. So that's how it started. I started with my playful management consultancy with the Management Challenge in 2005, and later on, I added the other products I mentioned in the introduction. But now the main product I think is the Management Challenge.
Yes, wonderful. And when you say new version, what does that include? I mean, are we talking about the whole setup, the logics, the measures, the decisions, the gameplay, and the game mechanics, or is it more the setup, how you onboard players, the facilitators? Can you just elaborate
technical,
a little bit more?
The system is more of now, so the old system has been replaced with actual tools, actual builds. But the most important thing is that the meshes that are in the booklet, in the manual for the participants, are now more actual. So the old ones have been replaced by things that are currently happening in our organizations in this moment in time. So we have to be...
All right. And we'll get into some examples in a second now.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And Hidde, how about you? I mean, you mentioned, okay, you wanted to stop lecturing, teaching, and inviting to play so that the engagement level is just totally different. But when you saw, or when did you get in contact with the game for the first time? And what was your experience where you really said, oh, no, I this is something I need in the first weeks of my course?
Yes, well, originally it wasn't in the first weeks. It's we moved it to the front of the semester. But let me go back just a little bit. When we redeveloped the semester, I got together with several business continuity management professionals, and I asked them what they would like in the semester. And one of the things they said was, well, your students, they have an excellent theoretical grasp of business continuity management, but when we give them a project, they don't know where to start. And so we thought that should be the other way around. They should have perhaps a less firm theoretical grasp, but know where to start and how to start. And that's where we started looking for examples and also making them, the students do more instead of learn more, get more theory. Let's see, the business continuity management is something that most of the students are unfamiliar with at the outset of the semester. And so they have to learn a lot about that. But they don't know yet about management, normal management. They have mm-hmm. done their internship at an organization, so they mm-hmm. have some experience of what an organization, how an organization works, mm-hmm. but not definitely not at the executive level. Mm-hmm. That was what I was looking for, and then I just got in contact with a lot of people that may help, and so. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually through Wero, I met Edwin and he told me about the management challenge and, mm-hmm. Of course, gave me a demo account. And then we just tried it as a group of lecturers. And well, actually, at first it was quite difficult because we thought we do not want our company to grow very much, and it mm-hmm. it grew too fast. So so that was difficult. But when you know the margins where you can play, then it works really well.
Gotcha. Well, let's get into the gameplay in a second. Okay, here's your 90 seconds to explain to our listeners who've never heard about business continuity management, and or the background of what frameworks are used. How do you explain that in a nutshell of a nutshell?
Yes. Okay, so I'll try really fast. So business continuity management is what comes into play when your business as usual is disrupted. So mm-hmm. That means that you cannot use your normal procedures like have a budget, have plans in that you develop, mm-hmm. because this takes way too much time. You have to mm-hmm. you have to respond really quickly, and that means that you have to have a different decision lines, and you have to you have a lot more uncertainty and less time to get certainty. So what you do is you actually prepare for the worst, and you ask, what if for instance, our building burns down or is unavailable for any other reason. There may be a strike, there may be a ransomware attack, and then we think about what could we do. And that's actually the yes. management part.
Wonderful. And then I understand, Edwin, this game, as it was developed and iterated and rolled out and played, draws or uses, well-established frameworks in the industry to teach, to show, to use. Well,
it's built on a model. The ENK management model is called mm-hmm. in Dutch, the Dutch Quality Institute. Mm-hmm. The English name is the EFQM model, mm-hmm. European mm-hmm. Foundation for Quality Management. Mm-hmm. You can make use of that model in your use of the management challenge, but it's not necessary to mention it to the people that are playing the simulation. Mm-hmm. So there is a proper base. It's absolutely. Mm-hmm. The measures are based on quality assessments, the best managed organizations in the world are part of the simulation set. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of knowledge inside the model and inside the measures that we make use of. Mm-hmm. And I'm a knowledge partner of the Dutch Quality Institute, so I make use most of the time of mm-hmm. the quality model that's underneath the mm-hmm. game. But for example, Hidde is mentioning it, but not explaining that much about what the model is and how you can make use of that.
Got you. So actually,
there's the I think the main distinction that we use is that you have to feed the organization, and you can get results from the organization, and that's two parts of this model, and it's broken down into more pieces. But the essence is that you have to feed the organization just a little bit more and get a little less results from the organization, because then you have a healthy organization. And otherwise, you just, well, you squeeze the orange too much, and then eventually there's no orange juice left in your organization.
That's one of the nice things. Mm-hmm. In the Dutch variant, mm-hmm. it's organization and results, both half of the model. In the English version, it's the enablers and the results. Mm-hmm. To have results, to enable results when you make a sentence of it. Mm-hmm. When a participant learns that's one of the learnings that's inside this game. You have to do something inside your organization to get the results you want out of the organization.
Okay, I could totally feel that. Of course, you two could talk weeks about quality management and business continuity management. But then I guess we all understand that one is the lecture approach, and we might doze off. Actually, we might speed up the podcast to 1.5 to save some time, or we could get involved in the game. So walk us through the first 10 minutes. Okay, so I understand there is a computer somewhere and the teams log on. I understand you send out the manual. What else do you need to set up, and how does it start? So can you walk us through the first 10, 15 minutes of the gameplay, and then we'll take it from there.
Before you start, you can set up a game inside the system and online environment. And from each team, one person can log into that environment too. So they can enter their own measures in the system, and they can see their reports with their results of what they have done in the previous rounds.
And team, this is not the whole classroom, right? You split up. How big is a team for the simulation?
We recommend a team of 4 to 6 people. So they have to decide on what are our measures for a certain quarter. Mm-hmm. When a group is bigger than 6, it's too difficult to come up with a proper set. When too small, the decision making is too fast. Mm-hmm. So 4 to 6, we do recommend. So that's what you think of before you do the game. Then there is the goal. What do you want to achieve with making use of the management challenge? So when you are a lecturer in BCM, that you can pick that topic, but in other companies, trainees are playing the management challenge. We have a leadership professor that makes use of the management challenge in his classes. So you can do a lot. That's what you have to think about up front. You have to think about the groups. Your teams do need a computer or a tablet or something to enter the measures. And when you start the session, you start as the facilitator, and you're the one of the members of the board. And you just fired the previous management team because they didn't deliver. And now it's up to the new management teams to do it better than the previous management team. We give them the manual. I have one over here. It's a booklet with 36 pages, 34 pages, with instructions, with the measures and all the information they need. They can find anything in that manual, but they have to read it. But it's too much information to handle in the time that we give them to start their company. 45 minutes approximately to read the manual, to come up with a fictional organization so they can decide themselves what kind of organization they are, a bicycle firm, LV, whatever. And they have to present that to the board. So to you as the facilitator of the board, this is who we are. This is our mission, vision, proposition. When they want, they can tell their strategy, and they can they decide what their targets are, how healthy their organization is, and what the value of the organization will be at the end of the game.
Okay, and tell me, do they get some sort of support, scaffolding to develop that company? That's like really a broad question, right? So you could be anything. You could do sweets. You could do toilet paper. You could do you could be a railway station, so to speak.
You can be anything you want as long as you deliver services or products. It's okay.
All right, got you.
And then you deliver also the maintenance on those products that you deliver and services that you deliver.
Okay, got you. And then I have two questions because you mentioned the teams. So let's say I have three teams in my room.
Yeah.
They don't play together, right? They're individual management teams. So every team gets to have their own company? Or is there some alignment?
Has their own company and they are also not connected to each other, but they can see in their dashboards, so in the online environment, how well they do. Yeah, when they can measure it against the others. So they are taking it up to the system, but also to the other teams that are in the room.
Okay, but even though they might be in different fictional industries, right?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And a bad decision of one team does not impact the other teams.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. And then there's my second question was, you mentioned the facilitator acts as the board, so to speak, right? Are there any other roles? And how are the teams distributed? Are they all equally? I mean, does everyone in the team get a manual? Or is there only one printed version? Do you need any other? I understand anyone, there's someone who enters the measures.
How they divide it in the team is up to them. So when they decide we have a CFO and we have a CEO and we have a CRO and a CMO, and that's up to them. When they got every quarter that we play, you can play 5 years, four quarters, so 20 rounds. Mostly what I see the facilitators do is playing 2 years. Then they start in year three and play year three and four. Then you can do a session in 4 to 5 hours. And you have every quarter, you have 10 energy points. And all the measures in the booklet do have energy, so small measures do have one energy point, and when you do a real big thing in your organization or something like reorganization or a real big project, that costs 5 energy points. And sometimes you see that these teams say, we are with 5 people, you pick 2 energy points, you pick 2, but then there's not really a set. You want to have a set of measures that combine well with each other.
So let me pause you here for a second and rewind a little bit. Okay, so 45 minutes set up, I present my company, all good, and then it starts. Okay, what's the first thing that they're invited to do with the company? Because you mentioned you either start in the first year of that company or in the third year. Well, what's the difference here?
It's you decide as a facilitator. So that's also before you start the game, how much time do I have or do I need, and how much can I play? What is necessary to have the learning with the people playing the game? When you want to play two years, we recommend to start not in year one, but start in year three. And there's a reason for that. And that's also part of the management model that's underneath the game. There are 5 columns. And you start with getting information in the first year about the last column, and that's your financial results. When you know as a new company, this is what I earn, this is what I have to pay, that's okay in the first year that you start as a company. The second year, you get some more information than the two last columns. Then you have also the information about what are my customer results, what are my employee results, etc. And then from your year three, you also get information about the organization itself. So you get information about processes. And so you get some more information, and that's you can learn more from that than that you start in year one. So
Understood.
Two playing years, please start year three.
Mm-hmm. And Hide, how did all these information get into the system? So let's say I now create bicycles in my company. We have allocated, as a team, we're sitting at the table, we're all locked in. And now I get the information of the year three, so to speak. But how do these details, let's say, I would assume sales, costs, customers, quality of the organization, is that randomized or do I have influence or do you as a facilitator have influence on those numbers?
The system provides feedback based on the measures that you take. So as Edwin mentioned, you have 10 energy points and all the measures that you can take cost a certain amount of energy points. So what you do is you select as your as management team the measures that you want to take.
Okay, so for example, I'm just looking at the list, and maybe we can share a little bit more about those measures. But for example, you could, support a partner, or you can get involved in some sponsoring, right? Or you can proclaim a hiring freeze, right? So things like that, right? You could reduce staff, but you can also refine a policy. So there's so many things, and these are only the small ones, right? Like content marketing, data analytics.
There are over 100 meshes inside the booklet. So
okay, how do I make sense of that? I mean, it's impossible, right, to understand all of them, nor to discuss the impact. How much time do I have anyway?
Well, that's the situation that you have as a management team, especially if you're just new to the company. Then you don't understand very much of your company, so you know the results, and you know that some people are happy, some people are unhappy. And that's where you start. And then, upfront, you thought of your strategy and the way you want to manage your organization. And that's actually the key thing. You have to stick to your strategy, but there's so many distractors and there are so many things that you find out in the meantime, because the measures that you take, you want to do the best for your organization, but sometimes measures are contradictory. So there is after you've taken the measures, you get the feedback, of course, with a quarter delay because, you don't have real-time information in an organization. But then you can see what you've actually achieved. So, for instance, if you have 10 energy points, your efficiency may be only 8 energy points, or it can be more. That's also, it's more rare, but you can have reinforcing measures. But usually you lose energy because of contradictory measures that you've taken.
Got you. So just thinking about what you said earlier, right? So the energy points, they are, I mean, you get 10 per round. How long is a round again? I mean, a year?
A quarter.
How quick?
You have four quarters, four rounds.
Wonderful. And how many minutes do I get to make that decision?
That's
out of
up
those
to
100?
You as a facilitator. When we play with people that are already working inside an organization, then you need more time because they know something about organizations and they think that the system works the same as the organization they are working in.
Yes, yes.
When you play it with students, you can speed up more. So when you do the first year, for example, we do rounds of 15 to 20 minutes. But in
for a full year, right? For a quarter?
For the quarter.
Okay, so 15 minutes per quarter. Got you. Mm-hmm.
And when you play it inside an organization with people that have a lot of experience, then it's not uncommon to have 30 minutes or something like that.
Okay, got you. Because you want to engage them also in that conversation, right?
When they have experience after the first round, then you can speed up a little and do it a little bit faster. But when we played it earlier this year here at Saxion with Hidde, some teams were far too fast.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then we'll look at, you know, how the tables, or actually how the teams flow. But here's one more question, right? Going back to what you said earlier, those 10 energy points is literally what you are capable, able, the resources that you have.
It's the resources
that you have to do something within the company, right? So that the
see it as the hours that you have available for your employees to work.
Okay.
You can also say the money, your budget for that quarter, but the thing with budget is that you can move budget from a quarter to the next quarter, but that's not possible with time. And that's also the thing with the energy points in the management challenge. You can decide to use only 9 energy points or 8 in a quarter, but those those energy points that you did not use are not available the quarter after.
Yes. Wonderful.
The other part, of course, is that you can make them do overtime. So you can allocate 12 energy points, but that, of course, then people are working 20% extra. So that would be 1 day per week extra. And most people don't enjoy doing that for an entire quarter, let alone more than one quarter.
All right, so 15 minutes are over. I have to input my measures. I think I just input the numbers of that.
You select them in the online environment, and you push.
Okay, I select them, and then
you push the save button. So it's you input those, and then it's set, you receive the management report of that. Or the quarter before. So
yes,
you're quarter always before. Oh, lagging man. One quarter.
Oh my God, yes. Okay, so now I get feedback from the measures I entered the quarter before.
Yes.
And I have to wait for the report of the measures that
you
just entered.
You can move on with the next quarter, and you can decide on the measures of the next quarter.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. And I do this again and again and again, but I understand, especially when you also mentioned the different time frames for the decision making, there's a lot of conversations going on, right?
It's all about the conversations the teams are doing. It's all about how they make their decisions. Are they acting on the information they receive, the management information, but that's old information, or are they doing what they decided on in their strategy?
Yes.
And how get is information? Are they able to do a good interpretation of that? Because we only deliver the information about the parts of the model that are currently in place. So what I mentioned earlier, in year one, you only have the last columns, only the financial results. In the second year, you have some more information, but all the information of your organization is missing. Mm-hmm. Do they see that? And are they able to think about what can it be? Can they decide themselves on how is our organization doing?
Now, look, so many things are happening and are obviously impacted by the decision, right? And again, I don't want to get too technical and how you calculate on the back end the impact and then the feedback. But, I mean, do you give the teams any guidance, or do they come up with the idea of, oh, my God, we need to write down the decisions we've made. We need to write down our assumptions, right? Because we can never backtrack what we've entered. And I would love to ask you also for a screenshot that we can show to the listeners on the podcast player. So is there some sort of logical link that I will get, or is it all in this report so that I can really say, oh, yes, I made this, you know, video and podcast marketing, that was a decision. I asked my team to invest in that, and now it didn't really fly because XYZ happened. Or how does that work? How do they make sense? Maybe this is already this question of how do they learn? But I made a decision, I get my feedback, it makes sense or it may not make sense for me at this very moment. I have to discuss that, I have to debrief. And how do you support that? I mean, is there a retrospective? Is there a designated debriefing slot? Or how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. You ask me what the 5 tips for facilitating the management challenge are for quality, with quality.
Yes.
And one of the the ones that I noted down is let them struggle and wait to be asked. So when you are in play, so you have two different hats in the management challenge. You have this the head of facilitator, and you have the head as knowledge person of the topic that you want to discuss with the team. When you are a facilitator, wait to be asked, because they learn the most from their struggle. And when they think, oh, I have the measures and I pick 10 of them, of 10 energy points, and they think they are okay. It's okay for me as a facilitator. What happens will happen. Mm-hmm. But when they receive their first management feedback, then I always walk around in the room, see what happens, listen to what they are discussing. But I tell them all the time, I can only answer questions that you ask. So I will never go to them and say, I see that you are doing this, but you can better do that. Or why are you? No, I wait to be asked. And then when we played a year, then there's the debriefing. So I switch hats and I pick the hat of the person that knows something about organizational change, about business continuity management, HR, and I will dive into what they did and how that lead to results and what they expected and what are the differences between their expectations and what really happened in their organization.
Okay, so there's after a year, there's really a designated slot to then add some theory, hit it, right? I mean, it's not that you don't do any theory in your class, right? It's just that you have a different approach. But here's my question. Hit it, what do you do? And then specifically, doesn't really matter if it's education or in the companies. If someone is new to BCM, right? And to those quality measures and making a decision maybe in a team, etc. If you see, though, in the second quarter, it's not that they are getting it wrong, but let's say there's a dysfunctional way of interacting. The team cannot come to a conclusion. They just enter some random numbers at the end of the quarter because the time is up, right? How much of a scaffolding, how much of a support do you give teams that are struggling? And maybe My second question is, which I just now forgot. Let's start with that. Yeah, how much of a support do you give if you see teams, table groups struggling?
Well, first of all, they all want to get it right because there's some sort of competitive element as well. They would really like to win this challenge, although experiencing is the goal and not necessarily winning. So the only thing they can do wrong is not trying. And I've not experienced that at all. There's no one who doesn't try. And and then when they get their first feedback, then they try to make sense of it. So this organization is sort of a black box to them, and they are trying to figure out how does this work. So when I pull this lever, what happens? And what the main difficulty is that they only have information about the results part of the organization. So if they focus too much on the feedback of the system, then they will manage the results part where they should actually be managing the internal part of the organization, but they don't know anything about that yet. So that's something that they learn and that we look into at the end of the first year. So we try to explain to them how the quality model, how that functions. And well, it's quite intuitive to understand that you have to feed the organization a bit more than you draw from it, because otherwise you get an unhealthy organization.
Okay, got you.
And what Sometimes I do point out, so did you notice, for instance, that your measures, they were not very much aligned because you lost, for instance, 4 energy points. That's a lot. So can you see in your measures what might be the contradictory measures? It's just asking them, pointing them to where something they can learn might be.
Yes, got you. And here's my second question. I just remembered looking at my notes. All the decisions that the teams make and the results that they produce, you can pick them up as a facilitator in the system, right? Can you go back and then see?
Yeah, you could do that, but it's... it's as Edwin mentioned, it's about the discussion they have. So you see some teams making a lot of notes, seeing what measures they've taken. But I'm not sure whether that's actually a predictor of success, whether or not you do that. Mm-hmm. It's about the quality of the discussion they have. So if they would be only feeding several numbers of measures into the system and then say go, then that will not yield any results. They have to have an expectation. So they want to manage something. They want to achieve a result. And they pull certain levers at the organization and then something comes up and then they have to make sense. Is it what we expected or where are our assumptions wrong?
Got you. So let's dive into that moment. Okay. I understand you played multiple quarters. There was a debriefing. Maybe you played even multiple years. You weave in specific content pieces. BCM quality frameworks. Maybe you can name a few more. What is reflected? What do you invite the teams to reflect after that? Right, so that they don't have the feeling, oh, we struggled, we got it wrong, right? Or now, well, we did something, but it didn't work anyway. So I'm trying to find the sweet spot where you say, yes, this is really enhancing now. Not only the capability of asking good questions, but then also really connecting those knots and understanding that we need to be prepared as BCM managers.
The business continuity management part is it only comes into play a little bit in the management challenge because this is about understanding how business as usual works. And there are actually 2 incidents taking place in the management challenge, and you have to deal with those incidents. And there's several options. This all costs energy points, and no matter what, it costs energy points to deal with this this incident. Yes,
can you spoil one at least? What type of incident? Is something burning or something?
I think we can spoil one. So there's one about forbidden agreements with your competitors, and then you have to decide what you are going to do as a management team. There's ethics involved, there's practical issues involved, and it's all about the discussion. And then they make a decision, and it may backfire later on, or it may be the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Got you. And what else do you reflect? Again, in game, along the way, but definitely also at the end. What are your favorite? For me, it's like 3 things, right? On the one hand, of course, the game presents topics and it nudges you, and it does some agenda setting. How it's built. But then you, as a facilitator, Edwin, you mentioned you're walking the room a lot, right? Yep. So you pick up a lot of signal and a lot of noise, but the question is, what do you focus on? Are there some patterns that you think are helpful to be aware of? And then, of course, I will ask you what are things that the players come up with, right? They also have insights that you might just not have on your sheet. What is some, you know, not just surprising, but some really brilliant things, or maybe some really difficult things that you were, you know, that you had to help them cope with or discuss and make sense of even afterwards. Yeah.
Now, there are a couple of things I do see what's happening in the session. So I walk around, I hear what they are discussing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do ask questions to the teams. Mm-hmm. But when I see differences, for example, in the way one team is deciding, and when you compare that to other teams, that are topics that you can dive into afterwards. How mm-hmm. is decision making being done during the game, and how do you normally do that in your mm-hmm. organization or as a group of students, or how is it being done in the top of the organization you are working in currently? So that's one of the things that you can do the debriefing on. The other thing, and the hard thing you mentioned, sometimes there is a discussion about a measure and how that measure mm-hmm. worked out in their organization. And they thought that it was a decision, a measure that completely was on processes, mm-hmm. fixing processes, but there is no effect in processes. That's sometimes a discussion, but then the game is the game. So this is where all the other teams also have to deal with. So please see it as a measure as it is and move on. So that's also why I always say to my facilitators, and what I also do myself, is mm-hmm. build a fictional world. Don't play a real one. So when you try to play mm-hmm. your own organization, or you say to students, please play Nike or Amazon mm-hmm. or then you try to find the measures that Nike is doing, but they are not in the booklet. So please come up with your own fictional organization, and it will always fit. And then those discussions are mm-hmm. not in the game, or you don't have that much of a discussion. Mm. It's sometimes...
Now before you go first, Edwin.
It's not that we have that kind of discussions a lot. It's one mm-hmm. in 10 sessions or something like that. So it's not that common that it happens, but...
Okay, before I get into the you know, the future behaviors and how to make this a sustainable learning experience... any other things that you observe or debrief? I mean, is it fun? Do they discuss so heavily, like even after the game is done, right? That you feel like, oh my God, we are now, we're leaving the game. Is it very emotional sometimes, or is it surprising? Is there some, depression happening, yes, well, right? When it... talk us a little bit through what happens in the room. How does it feel?
After 1 year, we let uh-huh. them look under the hood of the organization. Uh-huh. So there's mm-hmm. something that's called the organizational eyes. And that says mm-hmm. something about the development of all the parts of the quality model. And... Mm-hmm. That's a lot more insightful for students, and they can also mm-hmm. see, okay, so our measures did have effect, just not on the things that were reported to us, because we are new to mm-hmm. the organization and we don't know everything yet. Mm-hmm. And they can also see in consecutive quarters whether they took more results out of their organization, or they put more input into their organization. And so that's really helpful for them, and also to focus on where to manage the next year. And sometimes they also find out that in the first year, they've been having a sort of whiskey trail. So in sailing, this is where you, when you look back, you see where you've been, and it's it's not a straight line. And that probably means that you've not been following your own strategy, but you've been really focusing on the feedback you've been getting from the company.
Okay, got you. So, organizational eye.
And that, yes. There's always a lot of energy in the room. And one of the things we see in most of the games is what we call the last quarter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
When they,
what is that?
The last quarter, they try to win the game. And they decide on measures that are totally not in line with their strategy. They blow up their organization. And we say a healthy organization is an organization where the organization is slightly bigger than the outcome. So you have room to improve and you can become better and better and better. When you get more outcome of your organization than there's potential, then you are, that's the lemon squeeze thing. But a lot of organizations that try to win make an unhealthy organization in the last quarter, and that's the last quarter syndrome. And then there is a lot of energy in the room then when that happens to an organization, or also when it works out the way they want it to work out and they win.
That's where they confuse project management to process management, because there's no last quarter. There's never going to be a last quarter for your organization. It's an ongoing process, and that's something they take along. There's definitely always teams doing that, trying to win the game in the last quarter they manage.
Also nice
what
for
else?
Debriefing.
Yeah. Yes. So let's talk about debriefing shortly. What else are takeaways? Again, I know so many contexts, so many participants, so many rounds that you, quarters that you've played. But what are things that you are looking for? And maybe what are things that you've gotten that you weren't looking for that just surprised you?
There's one more parameter, I think, that's really important. Mm-hmm. And that's that the goal is to be as close to the ambitions that you have set at the outset. Mm-hmm. So if you say we need an organizational health of, let's say, 7.5, then you're supposed to arrive at 7.5 or really close to 7.5. So not 9, not 6, really close to 7.5. And also for your organizational value, you also have to come close to that value, because that's you don't set your targets for nothing. There's a reason they're over there. And if you overshoot your target, that means that you've probably had your people working very hard because they've overachieved. And if they underachieve, then you've left a lot of potential untapped. That's also not what you're supposed to do.
Okay, so I mean, for me, it's now, wow, I can see hundreds of things, just accelerating a little bit, that one could now debrief and carry on with then whatever happens next, right? Maybe just another game. I definitely want to ask you about that, but other topics, right? Because just hit it, the act of setting a goal within itself is like a full lecture. Yes. that's like a full, probably a round of management challenge. And to understand that, as you said, do we really want to quarterly change that? Do we want to do the OKRs, or do we have a midterm, long-term vision?
The difference between
how good are we in reaching those? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The difference between having a strategy and doing a strategy. Most organizations have a strategy, but do not do it that well.
Yes. And then, how often am I willing to change it? And then obviously, what is the impact of changing either, the strategy or the target? What else do you just love focusing on? And maybe what are topics that you think, are triggered, but not so easy to resolve in a couple of day workshop or even in a semester or two.
One of the cool things in the management challenge, you divide the group into teams, management teams, and anyone is part of a management team. But for anyone in a team, anyone can learn. So it's not you are the project manager, you are the CEO, you are and you are stuck in that role. No, you can learn whatever your team is and whatever role you pick. You can decide self on that. So for anybody playing the management challenge, anyone learns from playing the management challenge. I think that's a good point for this simulation game.
Yes.
Well, sometimes what you see is the division of tasks within an organization. So their management team, sometimes they have one person that's completely left out of the deliberations.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon for that person to have the best ideas actually to manage the company. Mm-hmm. So that's where sometimes we point out while doing the session. So please listen to him, listen to her. I think they have some really nice input for you to consider. There's tons of stuff to pull from. It's just that, well, at least in the business continuity management semester, what they have to understand is that it's difficult as a CEO or a management team to lead an organization. So you do have maximum impact, but still your impact is limited because there's an entire context of your organization and you cannot influence everything. So although you have maximum influence, still you cannot do everything. And that's sticking to your strategy is usually the best way to achieve consistent results.
Yes, absolutely. I can also, I could imagine also the whole assumptions, right, that are never externalized, that are never talked about. It's like, oh, I picked this because I thought X, Y, Z. It's like, yeah, well, why do you tell us that a year later and not, you know, the moment? Or what I see teams that have taken decisions and then obviously they have the information, the feedback, let's say half a year later, and then they say, that was a really bad decision. It's like, yeah, but you know, back in the days when we made it, we had a totally different set of assumptions and we didn't know as much as we know now about the org or the outcome or the other measures.
Well, that's actually the part of another lecture. That's where we focus on decision quality. So how do you know whether or not you've taken a good decision? And what I want to end up with is that the students understand that the quality is in the decision process, not in the outcome of the decision, because you cannot know the outcome of the decision at the moment you take the decision. So,
very, very important. Absolutely. I mean, we could probably now unpack for another hour all the learnings and whatever happened in the past. I mean, since 1998, this game has been available. I have just to wrap up the gameplay, okay? So once the years are over, I understand the management reports are artifacts. Are they somehow printed out or saved? Is there anything that the learners, the players take away to refer to, because it really sounds like you could throughout multiple semesters you can refer back to anyone who played the management challenge and say, oh, by the way, do you remember that's somewhat like making the decision in the last quarter and then finding
all the information is available in the system, so they can find their results later on after a year when they log on to the system. Yes. They can view it. The booklet is there, so they can bring the booklet to their workspace or where they want to have it. So that's what they will receive. We did the printing in the past, but it was a lot of printing. not that good for the environment. In the new environment, it's all available online. But when they decide to print it, that's also possible.
Yeah, so actually, the only thing that I usually add is the organizational eyes. So for each quarter they've played, I send the group what their organizational eyes look like, because then they can compare what it looked like under the hood and what they received in terms of results. But the main part is their evaluation. So what did I think was going to happen, and what actually happens, and what does that what does this tell me about how an organization works?
Wonderful. Okay, then I really also want to go back to those not making moments, right? Those debriefing moments. Is there anything that surprised you? I mean, is there anything that what I'm really trying to, the question that is pondering in my head, right? I mean, how do you make it work? I mean, there's so many things happening, right? In the room, in the tables, the debriefing conversation is going on. You have obviously your workshop goal, your session goal. What other tips can you give our listeners who are working with playful encounters, decision-making games, conversational games to, select noise from signal, to stay sane in a room where energy and how do you survive that environment, Hide?
Yes. Well, I think what's needed for you as a facilitator is the goal. So what is it that you want to accomplish, and only coach on that goal. So at least in the business continuity management semester, it's about learning how business as usual is conducted in an organization on a management level. So that's what you need to understand. And that's all I'm going to feedback. So I'm not going to go into any other things that I encounter, only that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. What other tips are there that you wanted to share? Walking the room, I noted that down, having the goal.
I trust the process. We have a process that you can make use of, and you can change that a little with the timing. But the timing of the game is, you start with the start of the game, the 45 minutes. Then you play a couple of rounds with a debriefing. Then you play another couple of rounds with perhaps another briefing, or the transfer at the end of the game. You have to trust that process, and anything that happens, you have to be keen on that, so that you can make use of that in your debriefing and in your transfer in the end. That's one of them. I already mentioned the let them struggle and wait to be asked, because when they ask, then they are ready for learning, and then you can discuss it. When you just say, oh, that's the answer, and move on, they didn't learn anything.
And there's a lot of energy in the room, so that's nice. But it's also one of the things that I find difficult in facilitating. It's that the setup of the situation, that's a difficult part. But once you've set that up, then it's usually easy. So you do not have to have very much preparation, because you know what you're going to do. But then the session itself, it's so packed with energy and things happening that at least I was very happy that Edwin joined several times, because then you have more eyes in the room, you have more time to talk to the various groups, you have more perspectives. So Edwin sees different things than I see. So that's I think something that you can easily do, and it's also it helps also to bring confidence to colleagues when they witness you do it, and then they have to do it themselves afterwards. So it's also okay. A great way to train other colleagues as well.
Yeah, wonderful. Yes, because let's get into that. Who can run it? I mean, yes, you mentioned the other colleagues now. So, yeah. Hidde, you've been doing it quite some time. And then I understand you co-facilitated quite some time. Edwin, what's the business model behind the management challenge and how does it work?
Please let me take that one, Edwin, because I think it's easier from a customer's perspective. So when okay, I first contacted Edwin, he set up a demo account for me. So he gave me one credit. That means I can play with one team, and one credit is 100 euros and each team needs a credit. So it's a really simple model. If you play with three teams, you need to pay 300 euros. If you play with eight teams, then you pay 800 euros. And it's money well spent, I can say. Mm-hmm. But the first time you get a demo account, you get it for free. And then you can try it with your own colleagues, for instance, or any group that you would like to play it with. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you can have a debriefing with Edwin. So what did you think happened? How can I help you? But it's really easy to set up. So it's you select a game, you select the number of teams, you invite the people. The system is, well, I would say it cannot get any easier than that. And also if a team does something wrong, then you can easily put it back a little bit, make them have their input again, and so it's there's no I don't think the gameplay can improve very much. It's really easy, I don't know about Edwin, of course, and the business model behind it, but as a customer, it's really simple. I have so many teams, so I need to pay so many accounts. I set up the game. If I exaggerate, it costs me half an hour. It probably only cost me 10 minutes to set up a game.
Got you. And you already mentioned, I think you made it very clear in the last hour that, you know, whatever context, whatever learning objective you have in mind when you are using the management challenge, I mean, obviously you are the knowledge owner for that, right? So you have to bring the topics, the setup, the mandate, and of course the participants then that you invite to play.
You have to do something in organizational development, and it's really broad. Mm-hmm. So the HR, business continuity management, quality management. Mm-hmm. When you do something in organizational development, and you have some experience with facilitating, then you can make use of the management challenge. Okay, so when you are an unexperienced facilitator, then you need to get some facilitation skills. Mm-hmm. But when you do have some skills, then I can help you to make use of the management challenge for your specific goal, for your specific topic.
Wonderful, wonderful. And of course, I'll link everything that someone would need to know before getting in contact with you. And of course, also your contact details, and not only yours, Edwin, but also yours, Hidde. You know, I just invite everyone to reach out. If you have additional questions, you can also reach out to me and then I'll forward that to you. So all good. Wow. Now I'm looking at the time, right? Don't really want to ask, but I plan to ask, you know, what other things you are doing in terms of keeping the energy, the emotions, the learnings high rather than lecturing. And I understand that there's just a variety, as you mentioned, Edwin, at the beginning, and then here I see the full list. There's so many other games from simulations and Lego series play, but also a Lego simulation. There's crisis management and in Topazia. This is can be found in the show notes. And then it's more than one episode we must record.
It is so cool that he did that in that semester for BCM, all those games. It's when he had asked me if I could fall, I could step in for giving lectures, I would have said no. But now with all the games that were part of it, are part of it, it's so cool. The simulation that the Lego construction company for 6 months playing, making a business continuity plan, fixing your organization, and that for the full semester. That's so cool. I don't know an example of that anywhere else.
Maybe I will scale my last question, my last two questions up a little bit. So, and I ask both of you, so what's the secret sauce, not of the management challenge, but of decision-making games or gamified approaches, serious games? What's the secret sauce for you? Why do they work in the way that they do?
Because they experience it themselves, they can make the decision themselves, and then it's theirs. So not me as a consultant, as I did when I started my career, writing it down, handing it over, and it ended up somewhere in where they didn't use it.
Yes. What's your take, Hede?
It makes evaluation possible, because you do not only see the analysis or the advice that you give, but you actually implement stuff and you see the results of what you have implemented. Mm-hmm. So in the Lego construction company, I asked them for goals up front. So how many houses are you going to build? Will you build them all right the first time? When will the first house be delivered to the customer? Will your crisis management, will you reach your recovery time objective? Stuff like that. So and then they can just see what happens with the measures they've implemented and whether or not they've achieved their goal, and then reflect on that and improve on their measures. And it's really nice, because they are actually doing the work. And the energy is high. You see eyes shining all the time, which is, quite uncommon in a in a normal lecture.
Yes. Yes, yes. And then, and again, it's like, it always sounds like, okay, they are doing the work, all right, or let them struggle, and then they own the decision, et cetera. But literally learning is work, right? Yes. I mean, you have to, depending on the philosophy that you like to follow, but you have to construct it. You have to, understanding is deep. Processing something, right? And as we know, emotions help, and obviously a knowledge mentor in the room giving feedback helps. And yes, if a game or a system can also give you feedback or a management report, that helps too. And then there's probably lots of feedback that you get from your table group, your management team.
They really feel the time pressure. So when a crisis hits their organization, we have to manage the crisis now. So let's come together as a management team. What is actually taking place? What could we do? What stakeholders do we need to contact? And also, you do not want to fail in front of the entire group. These are your classmates, and you want to show them that you have come prepared. And it's not, it's not like you could fail. It's the worst that could happen is that your fictional company goes bankrupt. So then this was not the right option. But still you take learnings away from that. And you have to, you have to be prepared. You don't want, when you manage the crisis in the final stages of the semester, you don't want to be surprised. And, who takes what role? How shall we take this decision? That has passed. So we pass all these stages of managing business continuity, and then they improve and improve and improve.
Yes.
And it is
wonderful.
Really cool to see how all those pieces of the puzzle with the games and the simulation things fit together in the end game of the semester. Also the piece, the management challenge, how that fits into the whole puzzle.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't hear you say you're not doing any theory. It's just that it's just a totally different way, right?
No, of course we do theory. So we have the good practice guidelines, which is the collected wisdom of all business continuity professionals in the world. So we do provide our students with those. And we ask them to read it up front. And, well, some do, some don't. They experience what it means to be prepared for the lecture, or actually it's more like workshops. So it's there's some knowledge component, but it's not in the workshop, because in this workshop something magical needs to happen. There needs to be a need for me and the students and the physical location for all of us to come together. And if one of those is not present, then that's not going to be a workshop.
I feel you on that. Wow. I think our time is over. Even though it feels like we could continue and do three episodes out of one recording. But here's my final question. Is there anything we have not talked about in terms of something that you want to share with our listeners, that you want to say to wrap it all up?
For the management challenge, it was available, as I said in the introduction, in German and French. Not anymore, because I'm not able to facilitate it in those languages. But if any one of the listeners wants to bring it again to the German language or French language, please get in touch.
Reach out to you?
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Yes, yes. So any additional languages, specifically French and or German?
Any language can be added, but specifically those two. They were in the first versions, but not anymore.
Got you.
Yeah. I would like to say that some students, they think it's childish to play with Legos. And then usually these are the persons taking themselves too seriously. So they do not allow themselves to play. And that's really keeping you from learning. So actually last year we've witnessed this in Edwin's class, and at some point I was also in the classroom, and they asked me the same questions they already asked Edwin. And then unsurprisingly, we gave the same sort of answers. And then they turned themselves on, and then actually they made so much progress. It was really really fascinating to see how far they've gotten. So I think this is about the balance of taking yourself seriously to come prepared, but also not taking yourself too seriously. So allowing yourself to fail, to make mistakes, and to be okay with that.
Wonderful. To both of you, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us tonight.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And to all our listeners, have a look at the show notes. Again, there's other episodes that we mentioned. There's lots of things to go down a rabbit hole and learn more about BCM and quality frameworks. But then also, don't forget to contact Edwin, not only for the languages, but also if you have any additional questions. Same is true for Hide and for me. Till next time, bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.